Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. A fun one this week. David Ledbetter, the famous instructor that's worked with Ernie Els and Nick Faldo and Lydia Ko and Michelle Wee, jumped on the podcast, had a great chat. Of course, news made a couple of weeks ago, Lydia Ko parting ways with David Ledbetter. And so we talked a little bit about that and the influence of the parents and the stress a 19-year-old who's atop a professional sport can go through, and really the blame that sometimes comes with being that instructor. And David Ledbetter was very honest about what went down, and it was a very interesting conversation. Of course, he talked a little bit about Michelle Wee. We jumped in on Tiger Woods' golf swing as well and what he saw at the Hero World Challenge when Tiger, of course, had some ups and a little bit of downs. And we jumped into the instructor-player relationship and how that comes about and how these big names go and find somebody like David Ledbetter, who's been doing this for decades and decades. So a fun conversation. Of course, this week's podcast is always brought to you by Swing Juice Hoodies. They've got hoodies, and they're glorious. The holidays are nearing, but winter is not going anywhere. Make sure to check out their selection of hoodies with your favorite golf phrases on them at swingjuice.com. Use the offer code BACON. You'll save 20%. Swing Juice items are perfect for the golfer in your life if you can't find anything else. And if you're a little short on cash this holiday season and you've still got something you need to get the golfer, I've got a free gift you can get them. You can sign them up for the Clubhouse newsletter. Look at that. See how that worked. We hit your inboxes on Mondays and Wednesday mornings, recapping the past week in golf and previewing the upcoming event in the newsletter. It's just simple. It's supposed to make it a little bit easier for you to find your golf news and not have to scour the internet for it. If you go to my Twitter page, at Shane Bacon, the sign-up link is right there at the top of my page. Sign up a friend, save yourself a little bit of trouble throughout the week. And if you're working this week, if you're working the whole week as we get near Christmas, hopefully the inbox will be filled with Clubhouse newsletters. That is the hope. A free gift. Again, you can gift it out all you want. The link is on my Twitter page. Speaking of gifts, I got a new podcast desk. Yes, my mother got me a desk for my podcast for a holiday gift. And I know y'all don't care, but I'm really excited about it. I'll send out a couple of pictures of it. I've got some Jordan Spieth bobbleheads. I've got a tribute to Arnold Palmer on it already. So if you follow me on Snapchat or Instagram, at ShaneBacon11, yes, there's an 11 at the end of that, you can see where the magic happens. But that is enough of that. Make sure you follow the Clubhouse pod. You can follow me, at ShaneBacon, on Twitter. And we'll get into it. David Ledbetter next on the Clubhouse. We now welcome into the Clubhouse David Ledbetter, who's worked with such names as Nick Faldo, Michelle Wee, Lydia Ko, Ernie Els, and many, many more. You can follow him on Twitter, at David Ledbetter. His latest book, The A-Swing, is available anywhere books are sold, so go pick one up. David, I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
Hey, Shane. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I mentioned before we got going, the point of this was not to talk about Lydia Ko. I've been wanting to have you on the podcast for quite a while, and it just so happened the timing worked out like this. But you recently parted ways with Lydia Ko, of course, the top-ranked female player in the game. You offered some advice for Lydia in an article with Golf Week saying she needs to take control of your life, take control of your golf game, and you hinted, you know, to kind of keep the parents out of the next decision with an instructor. And I was just going to ask, how involved our parents when a top-ranked athlete in the world is only 19 years old?
Well, listen, we all know parents are involved. It's how much they're involved. And look, it's hard to separate the parents from the kid when they've brought them up from a very young age and they've had so much success at a very young age. But there is a point in time where a player needs to sort of leave the nest, so to speak. And you know, it's all well and good hiring a coach, but if the coach is not able to sort of, how should we say, just have a one-on-one at times with a player, it's difficult. And so, and we always try to accommodate the parents, and you work around them, and you include them, and so on and so forth, because they're very interested. But you know, I mean, a lot of these parents now are very heavily involved in their children to some extent. I mean, you know, I don't like to call them an investment, but I mean, some of these kids are the breadwinners. There's no doubt about it. I mean, many of the parents don't work, and so they follow their kids, and everything they do is monitored. And so it gets to a point, especially when, you know, parents start getting involved in technique and making decisions, which not necessarily in our opinion, you know, because I used to, you know, we worked very hard with Sean Hogan, my associate. We sort of doubled up and worked with her for the last 3 years, and you can see the success that she's had. And so when parents are sort of suggesting swing changes when you're not there, and just because things aren't going right for a moment. And, you know, the thing is, it's very important that a coach helps to educate their parents. That's what we try to do. And, you know, one of the things in golf, and you look at it, it's there are going to be times where players go through periods. I mean, it doesn't, you know, you look at, you know, look at Tiger, for instance, or Jordan Spieth, Jason Day. I mean, nobody can play this game at the highest level every single week. So when one expectations maybe from the parents more than the player are such that, hey, you got to win every week regardless, and if you're not playing well, you know, there's something wrong there. It's either the coach's fault or the caddy's fault. I mean, it gets to a point where you're walking on eggshells. And so, you know, I mean, look, Lydia has every right to do whatever she wants to do. But if you look at the success, I mean, it's going to be hard for her to, I mean, she might match it, but to be able to do what she's done in the last 3 years, I defy anybody to say that she hasn't been successful. And so, you know, she's broken all sorts of records. It's interesting when we monitor very closely how our players, what a player's doing. And we look at Lydia this year, and her schedule is such, you know, after the Olympics, I mean, that's when really she had a bit of a downturn. I mean, for sure. And yeah, absolutely. She wasn't swinging well. She wasn't playing well. And that's the first time in her career that really that sort of happened to her. And so I think sometimes, you know, you have to be realistic and say, hey, what? I mean, look, she's still number one in the world. In fact, if she'd had a decent weekend at the CME, the last tournament of the year, if she had a decent weekend after shooting 62 on the Friday, she would have still won everything. She would have won Player of the Year, you know, the leading money winner, blah, blah, blah. And it just didn't happen. And so, but, you know, I think to sort of throw away everything you've done and say, well, it's not working, I've got to change, you know, I've got to change my swing. And because everything's based on the swing, right? And one doesn't realize, I mean, if you look, the fatigue factor that she had going in after the Olympics was incredible. I mean, she was spent. I mean, her fitness levels went down. I mean, her trainer said the very same thing. The ability for her to, I mean, she's not, you know, as great a player as Lydia is, she's not the greatest athlete, and she really isn't. I mean, I don't think she could play any other sport. I mean, she's a phenomenal player. She's got a brilliant short game, great mind, but from an athletic standpoint, she's not that great. So work it out. She needs to be a gym rat, this girl. Right. And we told her to say, you know, that working out is just as an important part for you as practicing and playing the game. And so, you know, the parents didn't agree with that. And so it's one of those things. I mean, look, things happen. And I mean, she's been an absolute delight to work with. She's a fantastic young woman. She's the kindest person you've ever want to meet. And say, so we just hope that, say, the decisions that are being made for her, whether it was firing the caddy with 3 weeks to go, you know, and having a new caddy on the bag with one of the biggest tournaments coming up, and changing equipment. We just hope that sort of these decisions that she really has a role in, because if not, I mean, it's like, you know, she's not playing for herself. She's playing for other people.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, in a nutshell. And I say, and don't get me wrong, her parents are nice people. I have nothing against the parents. I just think sometimes, you know, there's a bit of naivety there, and the fact that, you know, it's a little bit unrealistic to expect of this girl to sort of, you know, win every tournament. When the fact is, not only where, you know, you have issues from fitness and health, and you know, your game goes off a little bit, to the fact that you've got other players, people like Jatanagan and Brooks Henderson and the likes, and all these young players now who are phenomenal young players, and the competition is stiff as well. So you, when you add all that up to it, when you add it all up, in fact, you know, there's sort of a perfect storm, maybe, hey, for things to go off. So what you do is, what do you do? You should reassess. Okay, how can we get better? To my mind, you're looking at the long term, not just like, okay, what's going to happen next week. I mean, if you want your career and it's last two or three years, fine. And that's the thing one has to concern oneself with somebody like Lydia. I mean, Seri Park gave an interview about 2 weeks ago in Korea, and she said she was very unhappy playing golf in the mid part of her career. I worked with Seri when she first came over. I mean, for the first 2 years, and people forget that when she was 20, she won two majors in her first year. And although she played well after that, not to the same level. And she said, listen, I lost passion for the game. I got burnt out. I got injured. And that's the thing that concerns me with Lydia, young Lydia Ko, because as I say, as great a talent as she is, you know, we'd hate to see her be, you know, just be around for a year or two. You know, you want to see this girl around for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and is it hard for you to get through to parents, reminding parents that, as you've mentioned, golf is a very hard sport. It's impossible to master, first of all, but you're going to go through lulls. You've mentioned some of the greatest names. I mean, of course, people are very critical of Jordan Spieth's schedule last year. You talk about fatigue as well, and that seemed to be, you know, quote unquote, the reason for his struggles, even though he still won a couple of times. When Lydia goes through moments like that, and the parents are up in arms about the golf swing or it not being as efficient as it's been in past times, is it hard to remind them that this is a sport where this happens to everyone?
It is, particularly with the fact that, look, these parents aren't really golfers. I mean, her dad can't break 100. And so, you know, you're not looking at it from a situation from experience. I mean, all they're looking at is the experience they've had with Lydia up to this point in time, where she's just been a winner at every level. And so that's great. But, you know, you get to a point where you're going to have a lull. It's as simple as that, for whatever reason, you know. And so you've got to figure out, well, how do we, you know, it's not just a case of jumping ship, you know, jumping overboard just when the first sign of a storm, you know. And so, you know, and it is hard. And there's a language barrier there, and there's a cultural barrier there where, you know, it's like, you know, the sort of the mentality in Asia is like, well, the harder you work, the better you should get, and the more rewards you should have. Well, to a point, yes, but, you know, it's working smart, it's working sensibly. It's not, you know, going out and necessarily beating more balls in order to get it right. I mean, that could be an answer, but it's only, you know, at times it may be, hey, let's take a week off, not even look at a golf cup, you know. But I mean, if I told you her schedule from the Olympics, it would make you ill. I mean, with the fact that red eyes and not taking a day off and then going to Evian, where she was defending champion and had something going on every night, and then didn't play very well there, and then flew to Asia. The momentum wasn't there. And so, you know, look, I'm not blaming anybody, and I'm just making the facts out that, look, there's some other factors in the fact that she hasn't been playing well. It's not just the fact that the swing wasn't working. And listen, I'm the first to admit she wasn't swinging well. But when you're feeling like that mentally, you're feeling like that physically, you haven't got the energy. Everything we did, you know, when we work on golf swings, you assume a person's going to have a certain fitness level and certain endurance level. When somebody starts to get tired, old habits come back and things happen. You don't hit the ball as well. I mean, it was noticeable in Lydia's case, I mean, how many double bogeys she was making. So that's showing signs of fatigue. It's showing signs of, you know, not being mentally sharp and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, look, we're only, you know, we can't sort of look at things and say for sure, but, you know, there's a lot of factors there. But look, we wish her well. I mean, look, she's a great talent. She's, I'm sure whoever she hooks up with, I mean, as I say, I just hope that the, you know, the teacher lays the law down and say, listen, if you want me to help work with your daughter, okay, let's just be a one-on-one. You need to sort of stay back a little bit. And so, I mean, it is, we know, look, I mean, I've worked with Sean O'Hare in the past. We all know the history with Sean O'Hare and his father. And so there have been issues. I mean, we see in other sports, in tennis and football and, you know, goodness knows what. So, yeah, I mean, parents need to be there to support them. But if you want to get a coach, and I mean, hey, a parent might sort of impart some advice and some help, but mainly support. But, hey, let the coach do their job, for crying out loud, you know?
Yeah, especially if you're not much of a player. And this isn't the first time you've gone through this. Of course, you mentioned O'Hare, and famously, you've worked with Michelle Wee since she was, I think, 13 years old?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing with the Wees, I mean, look, they sort of, you know, people sort of look at it and say, what about the Wees? And I say, you know, the one thing, you know, in their defense is that, look, when Michelle came on the scene, I mean, she hit the scene like gangbusters. I mean, you know, I mean, all of a sudden, all these things thrown at them. Okay, this girl, I mean, she can play with the men. She can do this. I mean, they're throwing contracts from left, right, and center. It's hard to handle. You don't know. There's no rule book for that. There's no precedent being set before which you follow and say, listen, let's do this. Although, I have to say, probably the smartest parent in sport was probably Venus and Serena Williams' dad, who sort of really limited how much they played in the early years. So they, and we can see the benefits of that, how long their careers have lasted, you know? And so it's interesting, you know, with and to say, I think everybody just got carried away. Look, I wasn't, it's like, man, this is unbelievable what right. this girl's doing, what she could achieve, and, you know, hitting it up, playing with the men, and hitting it 300 yards when you're 13 years old and all this stuff. I mean, you know, you talk about a prodigy. And so I just think, I mean, look, if you speak to the parents, I mean, they'd say, hey, yes, we do things differently, especially when you get injuries and then you're trying to live up to what everybody else wants you to do. And, you know, so, you know, all of a sudden, you know, things aren't going as well. And then, you know, now you get all the criticism and all the pressure, and then you're trying desperately to find, how do we get back to where we were? And, you know, and they have been involved. But one of the things I have to say with Louise is that they, even, you know, when I'm working with her, I mean, they're there and they watch, you know, they're there for sure, but they pretty much stick to the same stuff that we've been working on. And Michelle, I have to say, Michelle really has, you know, she's her own person. Lydia, at this stage of the game, she still, you know, pretty much does what she's told to do. But Michelle, I mean, she lays the law down a bit. She wants to do it, she'll do it. And so, and she still, you know, in many respects, her life has been very successful. Okay, she's made a lot of money. She was a prodigy. She's got a degree from Stanford. In many ways, I mean, how do you garner success? What is success? Is it, okay, you have to win every tournament, you have to win 50 majors? Who knows? But we know what talent she has. And, you know, she's still at it. There's not to say that, hey, in the next 2 or 3 years that Michelle couldn't sort of, you know, find some of that form that, that we all know she's capable of producing. And, you know, I mean, we're still with her. And, I mean, she's like a daughter to me. And so, say, would we do things, some things differently? And, hey, I hold myself to blame in some areas, not trying, maybe being firm enough. But you get carried away when you have somebody like this. You sort of, you know, you get on this wave and think, wow, you know, this is it. And then all of a sudden, the wave stops and it's like, okay, now what do we do? So, it's, you know, it's a learning experience for everybody. So, you know, I just hope Lydia learns from other people's mistakes, and you know, the parents learn, and you know, because everything, it is a learning curve for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Siri Park quote about not loving the game, and I was just wondering, with Michelle, especially the way Michelle's gone about this and how involved in professional golf and sports she's been in since, as you mentioned, an early teenager, do you still see a fire and a love for the game in Michelle Wee, or is it just a job to her at this point?
Believe it or not, I really do. This girl, I mean, she's been blighted by injuries. I call her the walking cadaver, because I don't think she's had one part of her body that hasn't had some sort of injury. And I actually put that down a little bit to the fact, well, maybe not a little bit, a lot, to the fact that some of these kids at a very young age, I think, are practicing and working too hard at the game. You know, they're finding out many, many things now that you can do a lot of other things apart from pounding golf balls to actually accelerate the learning curve. And we're doing some things with a company from Germany that they work with soccer players, you know, regarding hand-eye coordination and spatial awareness and so on, which is all great for golf, but it doesn't mean you have to beat balls. Because if you beat balls hour upon hour, you know, week after week, year after year, at a young age, off mats, okay, in particular, beating balls off mats, so you're spending more, you know, that just pounding, what it does to your body, and I think it's a reflection to some extent of what's happened to Michelle. And so she has all sorts of injuries, which has really curtailed her career, no question about it. And so, but believe it or not, she still has that fire. I mean, she's actually taken the clubs with her to Hawaii. Normally, the last 3 or 4 years when she's gone to Hawaii, she's just had a complete break. She said, you know, I'm going to be proud of it, because she's taken the clubs with her. She's working, you know, she's a couple of hours a day she's putting into it, because she had a, you know, a reasonable end of the year, the last few, 3 or 4 tournaments. So she says, hey, listen, I'm really looking at next year, and hopefully I can be injury-free and go out there and play some golf, you know, and get my mind right. And so, I mean, she's still a huge draw card. If Michelle plays well, I mean, it's like, you know, very much like on the men's game with Tiger, you know, she moves the needle. There's no question about it. I mean, it's amazing. You see, when she starts playing well at a tournament, you know, the crowd start to drift towards her, and she is. I mean, when she's in full flight, I mean, she's amazing. The shots she can hit, she's got an unbelievable short game. You know, we all know all about her table-topping putting, you know, which is a little bit streaky and so on and so forth. But, you know, she's still a great draw card and she still loves the game. And, you know, hey, it's you know, as the great Eli Callaway said to me, Shane, she said, you know, the thing that we all do, we all live in hope, you know, and you know, that's why we keep making this golf equipment, and that's why you teach. You know, people come there because, you know, we all live in hope, and you know, we're still hoping with Michelle. I mean, because she really has only scraped the tip of the iceberg as far as what she could do in her career. And now time's passing. I mean, she's 27 now. I mean, look at, you know, I mean, you're almost on the senior tour, the champion tour on the ladies, you know, at that age, because you look at these young teenagers coming out and so on. And, but, you know, she's experienced, and you never know. She could still spring a few surprises.
Well, you mentioned the name, and I feel like I'm obligated to bring him up, or else I get fired from my job. Tiger Woods gave the golf world a stir. You mentioned Tiger being a big draw, of course, coming back at the Hero World Challenge. Just as an observer, I mean, of course, somebody that doesn't work with Tiger, what'd you see in his golf swing those 4 days at Albany?
Well, you know, actually, I did speak to his coach, Chris Como, and it's interesting. My observations, but it does look freer. I mean, it's interesting to see that he says, well, I want to put on a few pounds. I think he looks better as he is right now. Yeah. I think he's moving better when he's, you know, to me, if you look at his younger years, where, and I think back to the Faldo days when I was working with Faldo, I mean, Nick in his early years really moved well, but as soon as he started to put on a lot of muscle, a lot of weight, he didn't move as well. And, you know, I think Tiger moved very well, actually, at the Hero. He looked freer, he looked more flow in his golf swing. It looked, you know, he looked like there was less stress on his body. And I can see what they're trying to do. You know, you can see there's little, there were still elements of the old problems. At times he would get stuck coming into the ball, and, you know, he obviously had a lot of wayward tee shots. But generally, I mean, he made some really good swings, and he was taller through impact there. He didn't have as much compression down into the ground, which, and then as he would spring up, which to me would put a lot of stress on his left knee and his back. And so they're doing things really to, you know, eliminate pain, really, and to create some more freedom in his swing, which allows him to play. I mean, he's 40 years old now, so, you know, he can't go at it like he was when he was 20. And so, you know, I can see what he's trying to do. And say, I think there's glimpses of hope there. The fact that, you know, he made more birdies than anybody. So, the fact that he was out there playing, the fact that he competed without any pain at the end, as he said. And who knows? I mean, listen, he's got that experience. He still seems to have the zest and the love to play and compete. And so if he gets his short game seem pretty decent, still missed a, you know, he holds some putts, which was great, and he missed a few short ones, which, you know, he never seemed to at the height of his career. But his short game seemed decent, didn't seem to have that sort of that flinch that he had going there a year or so ago. So, you know, I mean, who knows? Listen, people ask me, are we ever going to see the old Tiger? No, you're not going to see the old Tiger. You're going to see the new Tiger, okay? The new Tiger, whatever that may be, you know, whether it be the fact that he wins a tournament or two, which I think is conceivable, I mean, it's going to be tough to win a major. Let's face it, the competition is far greater, far stiffer now than it ever was. And you just have to see how his nerve stands up and how, you know, hopefully how his body stands up.
Well, and something you said early on there that I was very interested in, you said you talked to Chris Como. I feel like that's a... like the families coming together and having a conversation, you know, Jimmy Fallon calling Stephen Colbert and telling him, hey, I don't know what to ask this guy. Is there communication amongst the top instructors, you know, at times about this or that, or is it just some of you are friends and you have conversations?
A little bit here and there. You know, some of it's fairly secretive. I, you know, certainly what Chris Comer does with Tiger, you know, they don't sort of broadcast it to any great extent unless Tiger lets it out. But Chris is a fine young teacher. I mean, he's, you know, the thing I like about him, he has a very inquisitive mind. He's looking at a lot of different elements. He's been working, researching extremely hard on back issues, which is what Tiger's peak problem is, obviously, and how to alleviate that. And the tendencies in golf swings to how they hurt back. So, you know, all credit to him. And to say he's a, you know, I've indirectly known him for a long time. He's a great friend with a teacher, worked for me for many years, Adam Schreiber. And so he, we've sort of had an association somewhat. And to say I enjoy talking to him, and he's a fine young guy. And, you know, he's no record as a player, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. But the thing is, I mean, Tiger obviously enjoys it, and I think what he says is making sense. And I think he's, you know, just, you know, if he can get Tiger on a track that that he believes in, and he's, then hey, there may be some success down the road.
Well, David, you did just give us a little bit of a behind-the-curtain moment on how that happens. I had a couple of questions, behind-the-curtain questions. So this is in-depth, mm-hmm. David Ledbetter, how his business works. How does the process work for a player to approach you about working with you? Is it a conversation at the range? Does a manager reach out to you? Do you see certain stuff and maybe mention it to a caddy? How has that process worked over the years when these top players, you know, the Ernie Els's and the Lydia Ko's and such, reach out to you about possibly working together?
Well, look, I suppose it shows my age. I've been in this game a long time, so I've created a, you know, reputation, either good or bad, however you view it. But I've had success. Look, I've worked with players that have, men and women, have won 22 majors. So, you know, I have a little bit of credibility there, and a lot of it's word of mouth. I honestly have to say that I've never gone out and sought somebody and said, hey, listen, I can help you, because it's just, you know, it's just not my way. Maybe it's my British upbringing or whatever, but I just never have done that. I mean, a lot of it's word of mouth. Yeah, we get agents calling at times, and you know, I've got a, you know, European tour player, Ryder Cup player, who, you know, has worked with a biomechanist friend of mine who was a big part of my book, The A-Swing. And so he suggested he come over and see me, and so he's going to be coming over. And so this is how it works. It's sort of a, you know, it's a networking type thing, I suppose. And, you know, I've actually, to be honest, I mean, listen, I've been in the business a long time now, and I'm trying to slow down. I mean, you know, but, you know, do a little bit less. I still love working with tour players. I mean, look, I've, you know, I'm having a lot of fun now working with Rafa Cabrera Bello, who's going to play on the tour full time over here this year. So watch for his name in the next couple of years. He's had a phenomenal year this year. Great Ryder Cup he had. Ben Ahn, who won the U.S. Amateur, who's now in the top 50 in the world. He's going to play over here full time. And then also Ryan Blom, who was the model in the book for the Ace, who I've known since he was 15, who just finally got on tour after series of injuries and playing on the web.com for 3 or 4 years, and he got his tour card, had a great start to his PGA Tour career. He's made all 5 cuts that he's played in, won over 200,000, so we're looking for great things from Ryan. And so, you know, it's to me, you know, look, it is word of mouth. I mean, you're not going to help everybody. Some people like what you say, some people don't. Look, I've had a lot of experience working with different players with different temperaments and different mindsets, and you know, and so it depends what a player wants. I mean, I'm still a little bit old school. Yes, I use a lot of technology, but I'm not sort of one of the modern TrackMan devotees who purely uses TrackMan and teaches purely by technology, because I think there's a lot of instincts involved in golf. And you look at the greats up until the last few years, they, you know, they didn't even look at video, never mind TrackMan and force plates and 3D analysis and the rest of it. I mean, it's all great, and I think it's great for all young players when they're developing, but in the end, you know, you've got to keep teaching simple. This is why I brought out the A-Swing, because to me, it's a very simple approach. It's a little bit different. It's not a method. It's an approach, and we've had some great success with it with players of every level, and everybody, even Lydia, I mean, she's an A-Swinger, and I just refer to that as just a name, as a brand name, if you will, but I don't teach everybody the same way, but I have certain philosophies, and even if you look at Nick Faldo and Nick Price, two of my great students through the years, they have elements of this A-Swing, which to me, the golf swing is a pretty simple approach. If you get set up to the ball right and you make a good body motion and you get the club swingy in tandem with that, in sync with that, as we like to say, then you can play consistent golf. And so it's just finding a way to repeat a movement there. And for the average golfer, this A-Swing is such an easy way of doing it. So I advise people, hey, go to ledbetteracewing.com, check it out. Because the testimonials from people, I mean, yeah, you're always going to get naysayers. And I like the fact that it's a little controversial because, I mean, you know, if you don't have a little bit of a different approach to things, I mean, it's just same old, same old. So it's not that different from what I've done in the past. I've just sort of classified things in a slightly different way. And so, you know, some players like it, some players don't, and that's the way it's always going to be. Look, players come, players go. I mean, people leave Butch Harmon, people join Butch on, people leave me, people, you know, and so Jim McClain, you name it. I mean, look, we we're all sort of, people get tired or bored of a certain approach and they want to do something different. And, you know, even young Lydia Ko, hey, I want a different set of eyes. Well, that's fine. That's the way it works, you know.
For sure. Well, I was gonna ask you a question about technology, and then you went ahead and answered it about TrackMan. So that was great. One thing I was also going to follow up with that is your approach. And you mentioned, and I think you hinted at the answer here, but when you're introduced to somebody new and introduced to a new professional player, is it a similar approach when you start the process, or do you mold it different to every type of player, personality, swing, things they're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, you really do have to tailor things to the individual. I mean, that's why, look, we do a lot of things on video and YouTube, and you know, it's not quite the same as being a one-on-one where, look, you delve into their past and their history and what they see in the future. You've got to do that. It's not just a matter of one size fits all. It's not going to work, because what is the player looking for? Where have they come from? What's been the problems? Why haven't they been successful? Or why have they lost form? And so there's a lot of stuff goes into determining what you come out with at the end. And so it's, I say I've been doing it a long time there, Shane, and, you sort of pretty much get into, you can find out what's going on with a player and, what type of player they are. Are they a field player who, just wanted a couple little feelings, or are they more of a detailed technical player, wants more detail about stuff? So, as I say, as a teacher, you have to be very versatile. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to help people across the board. You're only going to be able to maybe help one type of player. So that's the thing. I mean, I'm very glad in many ways that I grew up in an era where we didn't have video and all this stuff, and I had to use my instincts and so on and so forth, and use my eyes to determine, what was going on, and use my ears for the sound of the shot and so on. And so, we're talking this morning about, unfortunately, John Jacobs, a great British teacher, is very, very ill at the moment, and they're doing a tribute to him right now. And they asked me, what is his greatest asset? Well, his greatest asset, he kept things simple, and he got the message across quickly. And that's what you have to do as a teacher. What I did with Nick Faldo back in the day, back in the mid-80s, when we took 2 years, really, where he took 2 years out of his career to sort of get things right. Well, there's no ways you could do that today. I mean, there's too much riding on it. There's too much money involved, sponsorships, top 50 in the world, and so on. So, I mean, it's almost like you've got to do this. You've got to sort of do it on the job, so to speak. Make these little changes, and so you've got to get the messages across pretty quickly, because you've got to see pretty quick results. And so, so that's the great thing about it, from my standpoint. Look, I've got all these academies all over the world, and I love what I do. But the great thing about it, and writing books and so on, is like, we're still learning. That's the great thing about it. We're still trying to figure out this game. It can be a pain in the neck, this game, and it can be the greatest thing in the world, as we all know, from one day to the next, or one hole to the next, for that matter. And so trying to help people to play better, to keep this great game going. I mean, we all know that, the game is struggling in some areas as far as the popularity of it is. It's very time-consuming. It's not the easiest game to play, especially if you're not practicing or playing a lot. And so we have to find ways to help people. And that's, to me, I would say to people, how do we grow the game? I said, well, get people playing better quicker, and the people are going to keep playing.
Right.
That's the way to grow the game. And so we know it's growing in certain parts of the world. We're very heavily involved in the Far East and China with indoor academies and so on and so forth. And it's pretty stagnant in lots of countries, particularly the U.S. and Britain. And so we've got to try to get those people to find a way to play better, and, hey, maybe it includes just playing 9 holes or 6 holes, as Jack Nicklaus likes to say. There's different things we have to do, but we've got to keep this great game going for the future generations.
For sure, and I've got a few quick hitter questions for you, so just quick ones to get you out on, because I know you've got to go at some point. First question, and you can't be political here, a player at any point in their careers that you would have loved to work with?
Any point in their career? I get asked this question a lot. Who would I like to have worked with? I mean, you'd love to have worked with any great player. Look, I've had the good fortune working with, Tom Watson, Greg Norman, and, Gary Player, I don't know. It's any great player who has great talent, who, as a coach and a teacher, I said, this is a long-winded answer for a quick, answer, but I love helping people, and it's like it gives me the greatest gratification to see people improve, and so I get my kicks. You know, it's the next best thing to actually doing it yourself, and so that's what gives me the kicks. And so to work with, you know, some of the greats, I've been very, very blessed, and I've been very thankful. And so to answer that question, you'd love to work with a Jack Nicklaus, with a talent level like that, I would love to work with the Tiger. In fact, I gave him one lesson when he was 16, I think, or 17. I remember his dad, they were playing at Bay Hill. I think he won the US Junior or something, and Arnold invited him to play in it, and his dad asked me to come out and watch him hit balls for an hour or so, and it was the time he was living in LA, and then they decided to hook up with Butch Harmon, which obviously was a great move on their part. So, would you love to work with Tiger? Yeah, obviously. Who wouldn't have? So, as a teacher, a race car driver saying, I'd like to drive a Ferrari as opposed to, an Audi or something. I don't know, but I'm not sure that answers your question, but it's sort of my answer anyway.
Yeah, well, when you got a chance to meet 16-year-old Tiger Woods, of course, he wins 6 USGA events in a row and, burst on the scene and wins the Masters. Did you see it? I mean, could you see it? The talent level was a step above the rest of the amateur world and most of the professional ranks at that point?
Yeah, you do see that at times. You do see that special quality. You can't always put your finger on what it is. It's sort of an X factor. But there was this confidence, there was certainly the ball striking there, even at 16. And the speed that he had, and it was just something about it. In fact, you don't see that very often in a player where you think, well, this person's a can't miss. We actually have a 9-year-old from Thailand who I have a similar feeling about. This kid, he's 9 years old. This kid is, you'll hear about his name, TK Ratchkin. And this kid has already, he's had 9 holes in one at the age of 9. Okay, we're talking about, 150-yard holes. We're not talking about, 50-yard holes. He's already shot 9 under 63 on a sort of a 5,500-yard golf course. And you sort of look at a player like that and you say, this guy has the talent. And I remember seeing that in the young talent who unfortunately didn't go as far as he should have done for various reasons, but a Ty Tryon back in the day. People remember Ty Tryon, the youngest guy, youngest kid to get on tour. And so when I saw Ty when he was 6 years old, and I recognized the fact, this kid has something special. And it proved to be true. And unfortunately, it's more than just having the talent. It's also having the organization behind you to sort of see it out and so on and so forth. So, but nevertheless, he had that X factor. And so, occasionally you just see players like that. And you look at them. I saw that in a Michelle Wee when she was 12 years old, and you think, wow. And they don't always fulfill their potential. But, they have the chance, let's face it, because there's something special about them relative to the rest.
Yeah, Ty Tryon dragged me and a buddy of mine off our couch in college, and we snuck out to the Tucson Open to watch him play as a professional. I don't think there would have been many players in the field that would have dragged us off the couch as, sophomores in college. We went out there and followed him for 18 holes watching him during the year he was on the PGA Tour. That's how excited we were to kind of see, the potential.
Very sad that he didn't fulfill all that wonderful potential. But you do hear about that. But the wonderful thing about this game is too, you get other players who you wouldn't think would sort of looking like a Jim Furyk. Here's a guy who he was almost fifth man on his team, I think, at the University of Arizona for a large part of his college career, and then just through hard work and determination and an unbelievable mind. In a golf swing which is very idiosyncratic, to say the least. Here's a guy that, look at him, he's been, one of the, he's been sort of an ATM machine through the years. He's won a major, and you just never know. That's the great thing about the sport.
Well, I have to ask this, and it's, you can't include anybody you work with currently. The best golf swing of a non-student that you enjoy watching?
Adam Scott.
A lesser-known player, you already mentioned a 9-year-old, but a lesser-known player that you think has the talent to jump into a quote-unquote new tax bracket in 2017?
I think Rafa Cabrera Bale.
When Nick Faldo was on the 18th in 87, did you want him to make a birdie on the final hole? Or were you excited, kind of sneaky excited, to see if he could actually make a par and go 18 straight?
I didn't care as long as he won.
I think that's a great answer. David Ledbetter, I really appreciate you coming on. Again, you can get the Ace Wing wherever books are sold. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a great holiday and excited for 2017.
Thank you very much to all your listeners and you know, your people that tuned your blog. Hey, keep up the great work, Shane. Appreciate
hey, thanks
it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All the best.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Just a reminder, everybody, that Swing Juice has some great holiday-themed t-shirts on their website. Plenty of holiday cheer to go around with a comfortable shirt that you can knock off 20% with that offer code BACON. Comfortable, topical, perfect for lounging around on Christmas morning. Check out their entire selection at swingjuice.com. Many thanks to David Ledbetter. Many thanks to all of you out there. It's been a fun 2016 bringing you podcasts. We will continue to roll them out week after week after week. If you don't subscribe to it already, make sure you go do that. Write a review. It really helps out a lot. Check out Swing Juice. Check out that Clubhouse newsletter. A lot of things to do. But let's be honest. You've already checked out of work. You checked out a couple of weeks ago. You're just going through the motions. So these are the things you can do to pass the time before 5 o'clock. Hopefully, you'll get a chance to go play some golf as we near Christmas. I'm playing at 10:03 a.m. on Christmas morning. Yes, I'm playing golf on Christmas. I have the first tee time at Whirlwind in Phoenix, and I'll be out there smacking it around before we get into the presents and the food. I hope you get a chance to play as well. Hope you have a great holiday, a safe holiday. Hope you get everything you want, and I hope everybody is happy and healthy, and we will check back with you next week. Go out and play some golf. Make a couple of birdies.